Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez. Today is Wednesday. Happy Neville Day. Wednesday, October the 30th, 2019. It is 4 p.m. in New York, 1 p.m. Los Angeles. It is actually 8 p.m. because they're in daylight savings time over in London. It's 5 a.m. in Tokyo, 6 a.m. in Sydney, Australia. But wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I'm happy that we're back to doing Neville Goddard. We're in The Law and the Promise. And we're like two-thirds of the way through, Cindy. I mean, it's been flying. It's been fun, but it's been moving really long, you know?
Right?
Good stuff.
Can I just say that I love our bumper music?
Sure. You can say that as often as you like. I like it too, actually.
I was listening to it and I'm thinking, I really like this music. I hear it over and over and over and I never get tired of it. And I think my brain has connected that particular little segment of music with like happy chemicals or something.
So ooh, I like that.
Our listeners get that too when they hear it. They're like, yeah.
Well, actually, we have a lot of reason to believe that they do. And we got more evidence of that this week, didn't we? We got an email from a listener. Yeah, which
really
was really
nice
great.
Email.
And I hope it's okay with Beth Ann. Now, Beth Ann has written in before. I think it's probably okay with her if we read it because it's such a nice email. So I'm going to read it here. She says, hello, I wanted to write and let you know how much I love Neville Day. We do too. And thank you and Cindy Chavez for introducing me to Neville Goddard and for Neville Days. I am also writing to suggest a book that you might enjoy. This book was something I chose because of what I've learned from Neville Goddard's teachings. Maybe you've already read it. If not, I am strongly suggesting it to you since you know of Neville Goddard. The book is called The Sun Does Shine, How I Found Life and Freedom on Death Row. The author is Anthony Ray Hinton, and I chose this book because I wanted to learn what he did to escape in his imagination while confined on death row for 30 years for a crime he did not commit. Hmm. Here's an excerpt. He says, I thought back to being in the coal mines. I would give anything to be working in that coal mine again. I had hated it at the time, but I thought about how I had escaped the misery of it. I had traveled in my mind. I closed my eyes and thought about where I'd go if I were off death row. I imagined myself walking out the front door of the prison. There was a plane waiting for me. It was parked right in the parking lot between the two fences, a private jet. It was white, and inside it had soft leather seats, the color of butter. I sat down, and immediately a beautiful flight attendant appeared. She had dark skin and red lips and a smile so big I thought I would die right then and there. Mr. Hinton, can I get you something to drink? Champagne, perhaps? Why, yes, thank you. I looked at the flight attendant. Where are we going? We are flying to London. The Queen of England is waiting to meet you. I won't spoil it for you if you haven't read it, but it's overall quite uplifting and an amazing story that I felt would be of interest to you and even perhaps Cindy. Keep doing the work you do. It makes my life happier even more than it already is. Warm regards, Beth Ann. I mean, that's a letter. I love it.
Thank you, Beth Ann, for letting us know and for suggesting that book. Wow, when I heard that story, the first phrase in my mind was like, okay, go big or go home.
Yeah, right.
A private jet, and where are we going? The Queen is waiting for you. All right. I was like, this guy knows how to imagine, that's for sure.
I love the level of detail, too. I mean, the seats were the color of butter. I mean, how about that? That was good. Very, very good. Yeah.
Sounds like a good book.
I've already placed an order at the library to get on the waiting list for the book. So as soon as it's my turn, I'm going to be reading it. Yeah, should be good.
All right. Well.
And I also want to make sure that we get our promos in because as one of our listeners has pointed out, the promos are very important. So first of all, I want to thank those people who have been becoming members because, Cindy, I don't know if I've told you, our numbers are rising dramatically.
Very good.
Compared to last month, we are on tap to be about 33% higher this month. So Month over month, a 33% increase. I'll take that one any day of the week.
We'll take that, yes.
Absolutely. And on top of that, overall, we are now hitting numbers per episode on average that I was dreaming about a year ago. So, I mean, that's good.
Yeah, that's that imagining, right?
Yep.
We've been holding the vision for that. So.
Yeah, for quite some time, and it's finally starting to come true. In fact, we had various episodes that at times had done really, really well, but overall, the average has held up pretty evenly. And that's still holding true. It's just that the overall averages are up. Right now we're around 375 listeners per episode. But we did have one episode that we did, Alex King and I did it about 2 weeks ago, something like that. And the title was something like, are there manifestations you're overlooking, or something to that effect. And that one has done, last I saw, 735 listens. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So thank you to all of our listeners. And for those of you who aren't listeners, that's why we want you to become a listener. You can see, you know, there's lots of cool stuff going on around here.
Yep.
So just go to the homepage of our website, loatoday.net, and right at the top of the page, you will find instructions on how to use your particular device. It's actually personalized for iPhones or for Android users or even Macs or PC users or whatever. It'll show you how to set up for your particular device, and then be sure you tune in and listen to each time that we do one. We're doing 5 shows a week, and share on social media with friends that you're liking it, because a lot of people find out that way, and it's important to spread the Daily Dose of Happy, because like you said, Cindy, it kind of builds up right after a while, and you start to feel it, and you start to expect it. You have an expectation, kind of like an anchor, right? Like an emotional anchor.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, please do subscribe and send us letters, too. I mean, the one that Dan said was great, but that doesn't mean yours won't be just as good. So, you know, feel free. We love to hear from listeners and share what we experience and what we hear. If you don't want us to share it, you know, just say so. We won't share it. But we still love to hear from you. So send us a note.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrific.
So we are on to chapter 11.
We are on to chapter 11.
The Law and the Promise.
Doing so great.
Yeah. The first 10 have been good. I mean, especially that last week's chapter was just, really, really strong. So I don't know if Neville can top it this week, but we'll find out.
Well, my favorite thing about this book is the stories. And I can tell you that the story in this particular chapter is a really good one. And I think you're going to enjoy it. So the title of the chapter is The Potter. And many times in Neville's other books, he uses quite a lot of verses from the Christian Bible. Mm-hmm. This book has not been so much, but this chapter he does. So he starts out with two verses. The first one says, "Arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will let you hear my words." So I went down to the potter's house, and there he was working at his wheel. And the vessel he was making of clay was spoiled in the potter's hand, and he reworked it into another vessel as it seemed good to the potter to do. From Jeremiah 18:2-4. And then the next verse also mentions the potter. It says, the word translated potter means an imagination. Here we go with the Neville decoder ring.
Remember
that whenever Neville is quoting scripture, it's really important to figure out how he defines it, because it's usually completely different than what we've learned. And as you see that here, before he quotes the verse, he says, the word that is translated potter means imagination. Out of material others would have thrown away as useless, an awakened imagination refashions it as it ought to be. And he quotes, O Lord, thou art our father, we are the clay, and thou art our potter. We are all the work of thy hand, from Isaiah. Now, interesting here is, before the call, Walt and I were talking about something that I'm not going to talk about on the podcast, just because it's not my story. It's not for me to be talking about. But it's just a situation that someone I know is going through that's very, very uncomfortable and hard. And we were talking about the idea that so many times, you know, when things come into our life that are very difficult, it's like, whoa, like we really want to do everything we can so that we don't have to go through a difficult situation, right? And I'm raising my hand to be the first one to say, okay, what can I do to avert myself from having to go through these difficult situations? But right now, Neville's talking about, I love this, he's like, the vessel was remade. That material others would have thrown away as useless, an awakened imagination refashions it. And so it makes me think about all the, you know, experiences that we want to stay away from, but
I want to point something else out too, because on that phrase that you just used, there's a word that some people will read this word and they will think of it in the moralistic way that it's usually used. But I'm thinking he's saying something different here. He says, an awakened imagination refashions it as it ought to be. Mm-hmm. And most people will say ought to be means, okay, I'm declaring morally this is the way things should be. Mm-hmm. There's this moral I don't think that's what Neville's saying there. I think that when he says as it ought to be means literally as I want it to be. As I, the imaginer, the person who's doing the imagining, as I want it to be. That's what ought means. And it really throws kind of a wrench into the works of the people who believe in a moralistic approach, but it opens up a huge universe of possibilities for people who understand that it's not about moral, it's about what do you want, what do you prefer, what do you like. Seen in that light, it's just an entirely different thing.
True. I'm glad you brought that up, because when I read that word, one of the things that I always am reminding myself and my clients about is there are no shoulds.
Yes.
Right? And so that's what we're talking about here, is that this is just, it's what, how we would like to see it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And using the imagination to recreate something. We've already talked about going back into the past and reimagining a conversation or reimagining an incident. And he's talking about refashioning things.
And for those who would suggest that I'm kind of spinning it the way I want to spin it because I don't like the way Neville was saying it, I would point to the first part of that sentence, because the first part says, out of materials others would have thrown away as useless. Mm-hmm. So what others would have thrown away as useless turns into ought. Sorry, that's no longer a moralistic statement. That has to have a different kind of meaning. It's all part of the same sentence. It's not like they're two different sentences. And it means something quite different from what the moralists want us to believe.
So Neville says, this conception of creation as a work of imagination and the Lord our Father as our imagination, that's another one that Neville will always define, Lord, Father, Christ, he says, that's our imagination, will take us further into the mystery of creation than any other guide. The only reason people do not believe in this identity of God and human imagination is that they're unwilling to assume the responsibility for their frightful misuse of imagination. Divine imagination has descended to the level of human imagination, that human imagination may ascend to divine imagination. Now, that's really interesting here about responsibility, because that's one of the things, right, that I think is so important for conscious creation. It's the very first thing, the very first step to get any kind of magic to happen, to create anything consciously, is to be willing to take responsibility for your experience. And we always say that doesn't mean that you're responsible for someone else's crimes or bad behavior.
No.
It just means that you're responsible for what you do with it. You're responsible for how you experience it, for how you respond to it. And he's talking about here that the only reason people don't believe in this identity of God and human imagination is they're unwilling to assume the responsibility for what? For their frightful misuse of it. Really powerful statement.
Absolutely, I agree.
He says the eighth psalm says that man was made a little lower than God, not a little lower than the angels, as the King James Version mistakenly translates it. Angels are the emotional dispositions of man and are therefore his servant, and not his superior, as the author of Hebrews tells us.
I got to make a note here, too. Can you remember another time where he said something to the effect that the King James Version of the Bible mistakenly translated something, where he basically said, here's what it really meant, rather than what the Bible actually said it meant? I don't think I've ever heard him say anything that direct.
I'm not sure I have either. When I read that, I thought to myself that I thought I remembered one other time where he made a call like that, but I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, but it's pretty bold for him. I mean, he's usually pretty indirect with it. You know, he's metaphorical. He does similes. He does analogy. He doesn't actually usually come right at it head on. And that one kind of like caught my attention. Like, whoa, Neville's coming at it.
Yeah. So again, in this next sentence, he says it again. Imagination is the real man and is one with God. Imagination creates, conserves, and transforms. Imagination is radically creative when all imaginative activity based on memory disappears. Imagination is conservative when its imaginal activity is fed with images supplied mainly by memory. Imagination is transformative when it varies a theme already in being, when it mentally alters a fact of life, when it leaves the fact out of the remembered experience or puts something in its place if it upsets the harmony it desires. I really like what he's saying here.
Oh, me too.
Right, because we've talked about this before. In coaching, working with people, one of the hardest things, and just in life in general, right, in my own experience, one of the hardest things to get to shift is when we've made an assumption, because assumptions are based on past experience. So sometimes they're very, very sticky when we say, every time I do X, I get Y. And I know it's true because it happens every time. You know, when I'm coaching someone and they're saying, no, every time I do this, this is what happens. That's a hard thing to shift because if they're doing what's being said in this sentence is that the imagination is very conservative when the imaginal activity is fed with images supplied mainly by memory. So it's hard to create something different and expansive and transformative when all you're sticking to is the things you remember have happened in the past.
I also like the way he started this section. He said, imagination creates, conserves, and transforms. And conserves, of course, is the same base as conservative. Mm-hmm. So he's not saying that there's anything wrong with imagining conservatively. He's saying it's so much better when you go beyond the conservative.
Right. And when I think of the way he's using the word here, imagination is conservative, it's the way we normally use the word to mean a little bit narrow, right? Restricted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not big. It's small. It doesn't shift much.
This is basically a dare to dream really big.
Yeah.
Bigger than you're comfortable in dreaming. I recall a situation that happened with somebody I know who's fairly close to me. She was very concerned about what was going on with her parents. And I won't go into the details because, again, like you were telling earlier, this particular story is not my story. It's her story.
Right.
But nevertheless, she was concerned and she wanted some help. I mean, we were in a small group of, you know, four of us who were very close to each other. And we all she asked us, would you help me to imagine? I want to imagine a better outcome for them. And so I kind of encouraged her. I said, sure, you know. What do you want the new outcome to be? And she gave me this outcome that was like one step up from where they were. I said, oh, come on, dream really, really big. You know, go for the gusto here. This is the opportunity. You know this. And she does. She's an LOA person. She knows. And I said, you know this is true. Go for the big stuff. Go for the big stuff. She took it up two notches. And for her, that was a big step.
Yeah.
I say that because it's so easy for us to stay in that conservative realm, and when we dare to try to step out of it, we'll do it with like a little toe in the water.
Right.
But even a little toe in the water is better than where we were before. Everything that we can do, this is what my ultimate point is, everything we can do to get ourselves to take a really big step, to really dare big, is going to pay huge dividends. The only reason it never does is because we don't. We just don't take even more than the toe in the water. We don't even dip that toe.
And I also think that sometimes the small steps taken over and over are what build momentum.
They do.
So sometimes just taking the step, you know, if it seems really hard to take a huge step, sometimes we can dial it back a little bit and take a step but it still needs to be a step that's forward and that's bigger than what we're doing now, right?
Exactly.
And I'm like you, I like to do that too. I like to look at a step that's bigger than where we are now and then push it a little further.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's
a
amazing
little bit
what
into the realm of, ooh.
Yeah, right. Oh, God, I don't know if I can do this.
So this next story that we're going to read is so, so great. I really love it. And I'm not sure when this happened. Well, yeah, I do. In the late 50s, early 60s, I think. So keep that in mind. You know, it's important to remember that, especially when, because things have changed so much. So anyway, Neville says, through the use of her imagination, this talented young artist has made her dream a reality. So here's the story. Ever since I entered into the art field, I've enjoyed doing sketches and paintings for children's rooms. However, I have been discouraged by advisors and friends who were far more experienced in the field than I. They liked my work, admired my talent, but said I would not get any recognition or pay for this type of work. Somehow, I always felt I would, but how? Then, last fall, I heard your lectures and read your books, and I decided to let my imagination create the reality I desired. This is what I did daily. I imagined I was in a gallery. There was a great deal of excitement about me. On the walls hung my art, only mine, a one-woman show. And I saw red stars on many of the pictures. This would indicate that they had been sold. This is what happened. Just before Christmas, I did a mobile for a friend who showed it in turn to a friend of hers who owns an art import shop in Pasadena. He expressed a desire to meet me, so I took a few samples of my work along. When he looked at the very first painting, he said he'd like to give me a one-woman show in the spring. The night of the opening, April 17th, an interior decorator came and liked and commissioned me to do a collage for a little boy's room, which will appear in the September issue of Good Housekeeping for the 1961 House of the Year.
Wow.
Later, during the showing, another decorator came and admired my work so much, he asked if he might arrange for me to meet the right interior decorators and the right owners of galleries who would buy and display my work properly. Incidentally, the show was a financial success for the owner of the gallery as well as for me. The interesting thing about this is that seemingly these three men came to me out of the blue. Certainly, I made no effort during the time of my imagining to contact anyone, but now I am getting recognition and have a market for my work. And now I know without a shadow of a doubt that there is no no when you seriously apply this principle that imagining creates reality.
Wow. Fabulous story. I love it on a couple of different levels, not the least of which is she got told by people who were more experienced in the field that she would never get recognition or pay for this. And despite that fact, despite the fact that she couldn't imagine any possible way that she could ever earn a living doing this, she dared, just what we talked about, she dared to try to dream it anyway, saying, you know what, it may be impossible, but what the heck, I got nothing to lose. I'm just going to dare and dream it, and I'm going to dream it every single day until it happens.
I really love this particular story, didn't really tell us, but I really love when they give us a timeline.
Yes. Well, it kind of sort of did, because it said that her work was going to appear in Good Housekeeping in 1961 for the House of the Year, which is pretty darn good. I'd like to go look up that magazine, see if I can find it. But that's pretty cool.
Right. So that's I like that story a lot. I like the way it all unfolded and how, you know, the interesting thing was she gave someone a mobile, you know, for a child's room. So it unfolded from little steps, but also that there were other people involved, which is something I always try to remember for myself and to point out is that that's how the universe works, right? Yes. It's like there are other people and we make connections and we reach out and we go about our day. And usually that's how things start unfolding. So Neville says she tested the potter and proved his creativity in performance. Only the indolent mind would fail to rise to this challenge. Paul states, the Spirit of God dwells in you. James, now examine yourself to see whether you are holding to your faith. Test yourself. Do you not realize that Jesus Christ is in you? Unless indeed you fail to meet the test, I hope you will find out that we have not failed. If all things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made, it should not be difficult for man to test himself to find out who this creator in himself is. The test will prove to man that his imagination is the one who gives life to the dead and calls into existence the things that do not exist. Now, once again, all through these verses that he's got all lined up together here, where he talks about God dwelling in you, and he talks about, do you not realize Jesus Christ is in you, and all things were made through him. Neville's definition for all of those, they are synonymous with your imagination. So that's important to remember. The potter's presence in us is inferred from what he does there. We cannot see him there as one, not ourselves. The nature of the potter, Jesus Christ, is to create, and there is no creation without him. So one of the things I always like to point out is that if these verses from the Christian Bible mean something to you, it may be completely different than what Neville is saying. And if you are someone who doesn't have an affinity with the Christian Bible, his teachings are still valid. He's just using all of this as a metaphor.
And that's a key point. It's a very important point that that's exactly what he's doing. I would also point out something that this is a question that popped up quite a few times this past week in the Neville Goddard groups on Facebook. The question was essentially, how many times do you have to repeat these imaginations, these affirmations, these imaginal activities before you stop doing it? In other words, are you supposed to keep doing it until it happens? Are you supposed to do it like 5 or 10 times and then you're done? And should you believe that if you keep going after that, it's because you're really doubting it's going to show up, so you're actually working against it? I mean, there were a lot of variations on the question, but they're all based around the question of doubt, where, you know, okay, we're doing these imaginal activities, but I'm kind of doubting it. How many times is enough? How many times is too many? All that kind of thing. And I'm curious to know what your take is on it. My take was, in every story I've ever heard that Neville tells, they keep doing the imaginal activity until it happens.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Well, if it hasn't happened for you yet, then keep going.
Yeah, yeah. And don't get afraid about it either.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've definitely seen things happen even in my own life where I spent some time on it and then sort of forgot about it and then it came to pass.
Sure.
But you're right in that whenever we read Neville's stories, that's not usually the case. The case is usually that they continued until it came to pass.
Right.
And that's what I was meaning about. I like it when they give us a timeline. So I remember some of the stories that we read, they were like 3 weeks later. We were like, oh, okay, 3 weeks. Mark it on the calendar. We're going to start at the new moon and we're going to go. You know, that's a...
It makes us feel better. It makes us feel like, yes, this is attainable. It actually doesn't matter how much time it takes.
It doesn't.
No, but it makes us feel better. Like, oh, yeah, it doesn't go on forever. It actually has a finite limit to it that, you know, once we reach a certain point in our development where we're really, really feeling it and believing it, then sure enough, it becomes true.
Well, time is not linear, and we know that in our head. But in our life, we pin so much on time. We are so time bound, right? And it's like, so when I read, oh, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, like, okay. Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
So much better than the story says for 7 years. Right?
Yeah, right. So, that's why it's going to be interesting to read the book that Beth Ann recommended, because that guy took 30 years. He was 30 years, you know, in prison. And that's a rough one. But I'll be curious to see when he started doing the Neville Imaginals during that time.
Yeah, I'm curious.
When did all that start? You
know? All right, so Neville says, when he says this book, he says every recorded story in this book is just such a test as Paul asked the Corinthians to make. So when he says this book, he's talking about his book, his own book, Neville's book. Every story we're reading in this book. And he's comparing it to tests or verses that are in the Christian Bible. He says, God really and truly exists in man, in every human being. God wholly becomes us. He is not our virtue, but our real selves, our imagination. There we go again. The following illustrations from the mineral world may help us to see how supreme imagining and human imagining could be one and the same and yet be vastly different in their creativity. Diamond is the world's hardest mineral. Graphite, used in lead pencils, is one of the softest, yet both minerals are pure carbon. The vast difference in the properties of the two forms of carbon is believed to be caused by a different arrangement of the carbon atoms. But whether the difference is produced by a different arrangement of the carbon atoms or not, all agree that diamond and graphite are one substance, pure carbon. The purpose of life is the creative realization of desire. Man, lacking desire, could not exist efficiently in a world of continuous problems requiring continuous solutions. That's kind of an interesting take on the world, huh?
Well, especially diamonds. I've never thought about that contrast, diamonds and graphite. I mean, because they are, he's right. I mean, they are both pure carbon, but in two vastly different forms. And that's a good reminder. That's a good reminder. Right. Just because something seems to be a certain way doesn't mean it's always that way.
Well, you know, ice is hard and water is soft.
Yeah.
So man, lacking desire, could not exist efficiently in a world of continuous problems requiring continuing solutions. A desire is an awareness of something we lack or need to make life more enjoyable. Desires always have some personal gain in view. The greater the anticipated gain, the more intense the desire. There is no really unselfish desire. Even when our desire is for another, we are still seeking to gratify desire. To attain our desire, we should imagine scenes implying their fulfillment and enact the scene in our imagination, if only momentarily, with a joy sufficiently felt within its limits to make it natural. It's like a child dressing up and playing queen. We must imagine we are what we would like to be. We must play it in imagination first, not as a spectator, as an actor. He's talked about this before, but never with those words, right?
Yeah, good words.
We talk about when we imagine ourselves, we're not looking over and seeing ourselves climb a ladder like we would watch a movie, but we are feeling the sides of the ladder in our hands and feeling our feet travel up the rungs. That's different. And that's what he's saying here, not as a spectator, as an actor. The lady imaginatively played queen by being where she wanted to be in her imagination. She was the true actor in this theater. So I think we're going to get a story here.
We are.
My desire was to attend a matinee performance of a famous pantomimist currently playing in one of the largest theaters of our city. Because of the intimate nature of this art, I wanted to sit in the orchestra, but I didn't have even the price of a balcony ticket. The night I determined to have this pleasure for myself, in my imagination, I fell asleep watching the wondrous performer. In my imaginal act, I sat in an orchestra center seat, heard the applause as the curtain rose and the artist came on stage, and I actually felt the intense excitement of this experience. The next day, the day of the matinee performance, my financial condition had not changed. I had exactly $1.37 in my purse. I knew I must use the dollar to buy gas for my car, which would leave me with 37 cents. But I also knew I had faithfully slept in the feeling of being at that performance, so I dressed myself for the theater. While changing articles from one purse to another, I found a dollar bill and 45 cents in change hidden in the pocket of my seldom-used opera purse. I grinned to myself, realizing that gasoline money had been given to me. So would the balance of my theater ticket be given to me. Gaily, I finished dressing and left for the theater. Standing before the ticket window, my confidence dwindled as I gazed at the prices and saw $3.75 for orchestra seats. With a feeling of dismay, I turned away quickly and walked across the street to a cafe for a cup of tea. I had spent 16 cents on my tea before I remembered seeing the price of balcony seats on the ticket window list. Hurriedly, I counted my change and found I had $1.66 left. Running back to the theater, I bought the cheapest seat available, which cost $1.55. With one dime left in my purse, I went through the entrance and the usher tore my ticket in half, saying, "Upstairs left, please." The performance was about to begin, but ignoring the usher's instructions, I walked into the main floor ladies' restroom. Still determined to sit in the orchestra section, I sat down, closed my eyes, and kept my inward sight riveted on the stage from the direction of the orchestra. At that moment, a group of women walked into the restroom, all talking at once. But I heard only one conversation as a woman speaking to her companion said, "But I waited and waited until the last moment. Then she called and said she couldn't make it. I would have given her ticket away, but now it's too late." Not realizing it, I handed the usher both tickets and he tore them in half before I could stop him. I almost laughed aloud. Getting up, I walked over to this lady and asked if I might use the extra ticket she had instead of the balcony seat I had bought. She was charming and kindly invited me to join her party. The ticket she handed me was for the orchestra section, center seat, 6 rows from the stage. I sat in that seat only moments before the curtain rose on a performance I had witnessed the night before from that seat in my imagination.
Heck of a story. Oh, I like that one.
I like it too, for so many
levels. Oh, yeah. Oh. Right.
So one of the things that popped out at me in this story that I think is so important to remember, and like I'm thinking of it personally because I'm working on a couple of things, and I realized that like so many of the other Neville stories that are successful, she imagined herself doing what she wanted to be doing, seeing this opera from the seat she wanted to be in. And there was never any imagining of anything before that. In other words, she wasn't imagining the how.
Right.
She didn't imagine getting money in the mail. She didn't imagine someone giving her a ticket. She just imagined being there watching it, because that's what she wanted. And so many times, I think, when we start to use these methods and assume the feeling of the wish fulfilled, sometimes we're still a little far back from the actual wish. Like we're trying to imagine the how, if that makes sense.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. And for the exact same reason that it does and it doesn't. When you're trying to focus on the how, you're trying to imagine something that you can't piece it together. Have you ever tried doing that activity of figuring out the how and realizing that every single time that you try to create the map falls apart or
yeah.
It turns into five different right. directions, none of which actually get you to the orchestra seat? I mean,
right. That's what I'm talking about, is that how many of us would have wanted to go to this opera, so we start imagining someone giving us a ticket, or we start imagining someone hiring us for a different job to make some extra money so that we could go buy the ticket, or instead of just imagining that we're at the show.
If we did either of those two examples you just gave, we'd probably defeat ourselves.
Well, or it would happen, but it would happen in a completely different way. Like, that's what I always mm-hmm. realize, is that the hows are not my business.
That's right.
And when I try to make them my business, it usually doesn't go that way anyway.
Nope.
And so I love that in these stories, like even the story before this, the woman was imagining herself in a gallery full of her artwork. I mean, she was smack in the middle of a one-woman show. Instead of imagining it coming, you know, how it unfolds, you just imagine it fully unfolded already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's an important thing to think about.
Jeffrey's in our live stream audience, and he first of all, he shared something that I want to share as an aside. He says, I want to share that I'm on the brink of having my student loan debt forgiven. I've been working on it for a while, but today, even now, I'm feeling what it feels like to be living debt-free. So good for
Yay.
You, Jeffrey. That's fabulous.
Excellent.
And then he in reaction to what we're just talking about, he says, I love the theater. And then he says, we try to be specific, and it gets in our own way. That's an interesting point there, because specificity can work in our favor. It can work against us. And it's often hard to know where the difference is.
Well, I think one of the things that we see over and over with Neville is that, like, we started giving these imaginal exercises the term, we started using the term vignette
mm-hmm.
because they're small.
Right.
And so as specific as you can get, you can't get super specific about everything if you're just doing a one-liner, you know, a little sketch in your mind. And the way she imagined herself sitting in the seat, watching the show begin and feeling the excitement. I mean, that was it. But she was specific. She was specific about who the entertainer was. She was specific about what theater it was. She was specific about what row she was in and where she was seated. But she wasn't so specific that it was like, you know, 100 different things and how it all unfolded. And when we get there, then yeah, I think Jeffrey's exactly right. We like we hurt ourselves in the creation department there. We end up creating more things to stumble over. But I think we should be specific, but I just love the way these all went to the heart of the matter. Like the woman in the story before, she was specific. It was her art. Her art was selling. It was a one-woman show. She was in a gallery. You know, there were specifics. And yet it was still small enough to imagine in a short period of time. And I think that's part of the method here, is imagining something over and over.
Mm-hmm.
It's short enough where you can imagine it over and over, but yet specific enough where it can actually happen the way you are imagining it.
Right. Yes. I want to propose a rule of thumb. I want to see what you think of it.
Okay.
The rule of thumb I want to propose is as to whether or not you add a particular detail. And when we're talking specific, we're talking about adding details. Okay, so right. Should you add this next detail or not? It comes down to one thing. Does the detail feel better? If the detail builds your excitement about the thing, then add it. If it's like you're up against, well, I really should throw that in there. No, don't do that one. Do the ones that get you excited. That would be the rule of thumb I'd follow.
I think that I'm a very creative person, and I have a lot of veering over to the capricious area sometimes. And I have a lot going on. And sometimes what happens with me is I will start to decide on what I'm going to imagine, and I'll start to add in details. And then there will be too many details to the degree where I'm like, oh, like I'm trying to pick between two things. And yes. I'm like, oh, I don't know what. And then I just stop, right? When I can keep it really simple, like these have been really simple, then it's so successful because I can do it over and over and over. And I know what those things are. I had one that I talked about probably over a year ago. But I was imagining that we were celebrating a certain thing. We were in a certain restaurant. We had a glass of wine and we toasted and we said Mazel Tov. And that was my whole imagination. It was very short and sweet and to the point. And not but a couple of months later, everything unfolded and there we were. And we were in a restaurant and we were speaking to our rabbi about marrying us. And the waiter brought wine over and the rabbi toasted us and said Mazel Tov. And it just all hit me. I was like, oh my gosh, because actually that wasn't the thing that I was working on manifesting, but that was so much better.
It's still good.
Yeah. So, but it was small. And you know, I don't know if that works for everybody, but I'm just looking at these examples we're reading about and recognizing that. Remember the story about the guy that wanted a particular record and it was sold out?
Yes. Yes.
And he, you know, his too was very small. He walked into the place and said, do you have this record? And the store clerk said, why, yes, we do. That was it. That was like the whole thing. It unfolded a little differently, but he still got his outcome. So yeah, I think that being short, sweet, and to the point, short, sweet, specific, to the point, that will help us.
And being excited, I think, is a big portion of it. I mean,
oh yeah,
without that excitement, Neville talks a lot in this particular section about desire. You can't really have desire unless you're excited about it. You can't talk yourself into, I think I'm going to have a desire now. It doesn't work that way.
Whenever I'm coaching someone and they tell me they don't know what they want, like a lot of times people will, they know what they don't want. Mm-hmm. Like they don't want what they have. Mm-hmm. And that's why they'll come to me for coaching. So, you know, of course, what's the question? Well, what do you want? And whenever someone isn't quite certain what they want, I always encourage them to pay attention to their curiosity. Mm-hmm. And no matter what it is, mm-hmm. like it might seem like, what are you curious about lately? Yeah. And it may be they're curious about gardening, but what they came to me for is because they want a better marriage or something. You know, it might mm-hmm. not seem connected.
Right.
But if you follow that, because that's your higher, wiser, inner self nudging you to go in a direction. And curiosity is often how. So, tip. Pro
good
tip.
Good one, too. I like that one. A pro tip. That's right. Oh, that's good. That's good. And it's just that reminder. I think you're right smack on that when we keep it short and to the point. We don't get as caught up in all of that stuff. We don't get caught up in those horrible hows. We don't get caught up in, oh, geez, I really should throw that in there. We don't get caught up in all that stuff. And on those occasions, by the way, this is a cool thing, too, that I think comes out of the conversation you and I had about a month ago. When we do get to that place where we just kind of trap ourselves and like, we can't seem to get out of that feeling of malaise, I'm finding that the phrase that came out of the other Neville story is really helpful. Isn't it wonderful? Something marvelous is happening for me now.
Yes, yes. I used that phrase as I was falling asleep for a week, and the week after that was, like, so amazing. Like, yeah, no, that helped a lot. That helped a lot. And notice how, like, as we read these stories, so many of the stories we've read, you know, in the past few weeks come to mind. Like the story where the woman wanted to go to London. I think it was a woman. So the person imagined themselves. They had seen in a movie or something like a shot of Buckingham Palace.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that picture in their mind, and they just imagined themselves standing there with their hand touching, you know, a gate or something.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah, that was the whole thing.
Now, when we read the whole story, it always unfolds in this way that's just so amazing with so many details, right? Like this story of the woman artist that gave the mobile, and the friend referred her to this person, and that person showed it to this person, and that person called her. There's all these details, but remember, none of those details were part of her work. Her work was just imagining herself in the gallery. Just
exactly.
Like this story, this woman imagined herself in the theater, and how it unfolded, like at one point she said, I almost laughed out loud when she heard the women talking, right? There was all these details in her telling of how it unfolded, but none of those details have to be in the actual work.
Well, actually, I'm not sure they could be, because, I mean, this has always been my experience whenever I've experienced some kind of miracle. I'll call these miracles because they really are.
Yeah.
Whenever I've experienced one, I'll look back and I'll say, a scriptwriter from Hollywood, if they wrote this one, it would be thrown out for being so completely unbelievable.
Right, like, yeah, this would never happen. Right, exactly.
There's no way you could create that one in advance. You just, it'd be stupid to try.
So Neville goes on to say, and I love this, and this is it in a nutshell of all these things. We must actually, and actually he's quoting Edward Thomas, we must actually be in imagination. It's one thing to think of the end, and another thing to think from the end. To think from the end, to enact the end, is to create reality. The interactions must correspond to the actions we would physically perform after these things should be. And I think about all of these people in these stories, the one that was being an artist that was successful, the one that was being a person that was in Buckingham Palace, right? The one that was being the part of the audience in the theater.
Right.
They were stepping into that identity. To live wisely, we must be aware of our imaginal activity and to see to it that it is faithfully shaping the end we desire. The world is clay. Our imagination is the potter. And he quotes William Blake, we should always imagine ends that are of value or promise well. He who desires but acts not breeds pestilence. What's done flows from what's imagined. Outward forms reveal the imaginings of man. Man is the shuttle to whose winding quest and passage through these looms God ordered motion, but ordained no rest. It's when you think about the idea that Neville equates the word God
right.
with our imagination, it would say that our imagination orders motion, but doesn't ordain rest. So always in movement here, imaginatively, right?
That's right. I'm also struck by that last section because he made it pretty clear that to be is the end. He was saying that in order to get to where you want to, you have to think about the end, and in that end, you'll be. But I kind of turned around and said, you know, being is actually being in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Assuming the feeling of the wish fulfilled.
Yeah. So it's not just about attracting something. It's about living there.
Yeah.
It's about being in that place all the time. You know, and fortunately, the place shifts because our desires shift, which is good, and they change. And as they change, we develop new desires, and it's just an ongoing cycle of more desires, more ends, more being in that place, more stuff happening.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
So we've got one more story in this chapter.
Oh, good.
This person writes to Neville, I run a small business, solely owned, and a few years ago it seemed that my venture would end in failure. For some months, sales had fallen steadily, and I found myself in a financial jam, along with thousands of other small businessmen, as this period spanned one of our country's minor recessions. I was badly in debt and needed at least $3,000 almost immediately. My auditors advised me to close my doors, try to salvage what I could. Instead, I turned to my imagination. I knew your teaching, but had never actually attempted to solve any problem in this manner. I was frankly skeptical of the entire idea that imagination can create reality, but I was also desperate, and desperation forced me to test your teaching. We talked about this last week, right? That a couple of the stories were people that didn't really believe it was going to work.
Yeah.
He but says, they figured, skeptics.
They figured they had nothing to lose. Like, well, right. Give it a shot. You know, what's the worst that could possibly happen? Nothing. Okay.
Right.
Well, go for it.
I'm desperate. I'm going to try it. He says, I imagined my office receiving $4,000 unexpectedly in remittances due. This money would have to come from new orders as my accounts receivable were practically non-existent. But this seemed far-fetched as I hadn't received this much in sales during the last 4 months or more. Nevertheless, I kept my imaginal picture of receiving this amount of money steadily before me for 3 days. Early the fourth morning, a customer I had not heard from in months called me on the telephone, asking me to come and see him personally. I was to bring a quotation previously given him for machinery needed by his factory. The quotation was months old, but I dug it out of my files and lost no time in arriving at his office that day. I wrote out the order, which he signed, but I saw no immediate help for me in the transaction, as the equipment he wanted would take from 4 to 6 months for factory delivery. And of course, my customer did not have to pay for it until delivered. I thanked him for the order, and I rose to leave. He stopped me at the door and handed me a check for a little over $4,000, saying, I want to pay for the merchandise now in advance for tax purposes, you know. You don't mind? No, I didn't mind. I realized what had happened the moment I took that check into my hands. Within 3 days, my imaginal act had done for me what I hadn't been able to do in months of desperate financial shuffling. I know now that imagination could have brought $40,000 into my business just as easily as the $4,000. And then he closes this chapter with the same quote from Isaiah. O Lord, thou art our Father. We are the clay and thou art the potter. We are all the work of thy hand. In Nevelese, that is, oh, my imagination. I am the clay and you are the potter. So using that imagination, I love the way this man says, now I know that I could have brought in $40,000 just as easy. $4,000.
Yeah. And I also, there's an important distinction going on here, and I want us to touch on it, because this story depicts two different forms of desperation. One form of desperation is the kind where you're focused on the desperation and you're despairing and you're despairing and you're despairing and you get one bad result after another. The other form of desperation is where you're so desperate you just throw up your hand and say, I give up.
That's the non-resistant one.
That's right. And that's the one that led to the $4,000 check.
Right. Yeah.
That's really noteworthy. Up until that point, he said himself, his accounts receivable were practically non-existent. This is a very bad sales period.
Right.
And I guarantee during that time, he was focused on sales aren't coming in, sales aren't coming in, sales aren't coming in.
Right.
What am I going to do? I'm running out of money. I'm deep in debt. It was just this ongoing litany of all things that were going wrong until finally he just said, screw it. I got nothing to lose. I'll just do the Neville thing.
Right. And that's the thing is that the focus was different. And so many times, I mean, look at the people that we hear the stories about that have tried and tried and tried to have a baby. And then they finally give up and they do the paperwork for an adoption and then they get pregnant.
It's amazing.
Because all of a sudden they were not resisting. I will tell you what happened to me today. So tomorrow is Halloween and we've been gathering all the things for our costumes.
Ah,
yeah, not going to tell you what it is. You have to just wait. But one of the things that I ordered fingernail polish, a really wild fingernail polish. So I was very excited. Said it was going to be here by Monday when I ordered it. But it didn't come by Monday. And it said, so I kept looking at the tracking, and it said it would be here by yesterday. And it said FedEx would bring it by yesterday by 9 p.m. And it didn't show up.
Ooh.
So I was tracking it, and it said, I noticed it said like FedEx Smart Post or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's when FedEx takes it to the post office and then the post office brings it. And in my city, they bring it to the big post office, which then has to deliver it to my post office, right? So it's always like an extra day or two. And so last night it said, suddenly the tracking just said, no tracking information, delivery is pending, no information. And it said, if it's out of their hands, if they don't have it anymore, then it's because that's why they're not giving you a date. And and I said, Smart Post. I said, oh, okay. And then it said it had been delivered to the Baton Rouge FedEx, right? But that it was going to go to the post office. So I said, okay, it's not going to be here in time. So today the mail came. I said, all right, the mail didn't bring it. And I said, well, I'm just going to pick a color. I'm just going to pick a color this morning that I think is pretty close, that I'll be good with the costume, and I'll just do my nails. I got one coat of nail polish open. Knock on the door. It's FedEx.
The moment you let go is the moment it showed up.
And I said, there it is. As soon as I had no resistance, I was like, oh, well, I'll just use this other one. This one's fine. It's a little thing, but that's how it works, right? As soon as we stop worrying over it, I was like, whatever, it'll come next week and I'll deal with it then. And
that's
literally, funny. Like, I think my nails were still wet. And I looked up, I saw the FedEx truck. I was like, what? Are you kidding? So.
That is funny. I also want to tell a story, too, because I've been telling people on the show about how my mom left my brother, my sister, and I a legacy. And it's going to be making a big difference in terms of ironing out our financial situations. And I've been taking advantage of, well, first of all, I don't know if I told you, it's also led to another legacy within the legacy. There's a whole story that's involved in that. As we're finding out that we're going to get actually more money than we thought, simply because of a mistake that was made by the insurance company about 4 years ago. But long story short, we're still waiting for the money, the funds to show up, and I have it. I signed a form that says that when the money comes, it will come by direct deposit to my bank account. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to the day when very soon I'm going to look at my bank balance and it's going to show this very, very large balance. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a great opportunity.
Yes.
Right? This is a way for me to practice every single day anticipating I'm going to get a big bank balance improvement. Right?
Right.
And every day that I think about this, I get excited about it because I know it's really going to happen. I don't have to work on this one, right? That's my point. This is something that there's no resistance on because it's already coming true. So I can just keep milking it every single day.
Right.
And I don't know what that will lead to, but I do know it will lead to something beyond receiving the legacy in my bank account. That's my point.
Well, I keep thinking about this story where the guy said, now I know I could have, you know, created 40,000 as opposed to 4,000 just as easily. So
yeah.
I'm watching Walt's brain make that number bigger.
Well, and that's the cool part. I don't have to make it bigger even. All I have to do is just keep celebrating the fact that this thing is going to be coming into my bank account.
Very true.
Yeah, it doesn't take any work at all. It's just like, oh, wow, I can imagine it being in my bank account. It's going to happen really, really soon. How exciting is that? And I can do that every single day.
Keep going.
That's right. So, good stuff. And let's see, anything more from Jeffrey? Jeffrey says, I used to work for the United States Post Office. This is how that works. The word of experience.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there are lots of jokes about the post office, not just here in the U.S., but around the world, too. And I'm sure some of them are deserved, but I also wonder how many of them were attracted.
Right, exactly. I was not thinking of anything else for 24 hours. I probably hit that little tracking button like 50 times. Where is it? Where is it?
It's just, we're learning. I think that's the best way to say it is. We're all still learning. You know, we know this stuff. We hear these cool stories. We say, aren't they cool stories? It's kind of like the guy who said, you know, I've been listening to your teaching all this time. I never actually tried it.
Right? I knew about your teaching. I was like, no, I never actually used it. You have to get desperate. But that's the truth for so many of us so much of the time.
It's true. Yeah. But still, it's also got its funny side, which... it's also part of the daily dose of happy because you got to laugh at it when you do stuff like that, when you catch yourself. So good stuff. I'm looking forward to chapter 12, which we'll do next week. In the meantime, I want you to let people know how to reach Cindy Chavez, the life coach, in case they have an opportunity or a reason to do that.
I would love for you to reach out and say hello. CindyChavez.com, CindyChavez. Reach out, say hello, and if you need a coach, I'd love to be your coach. Love to talk to you about how that works. So,
and even if you don't want to be coached, just do a Beth Ann and send us a note telling us what's going on.
Please,
share a book with us. You know,
we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, good stuff. So thank you very much, Cindy. Appreciate your wonderful insights on this. Thank you, live streamers, including Jeffrey. Thank you to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on Alloy Today. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.